The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Informed Alive Radio, to the Health Hour on 1150 AM KKNW and streaming live to CHD TV. I am your host, Bernadette Pager, and finally, I had my screen missing from me, and now I can see it. Yay! So we got a couple of great hours up for you today. In the first hour, we're going to be talking about the soil and gardening and so many connections to what we do. And in the second hour, we're going to get the dirt, the scoop on what's going on with the World Health Organization, with that pandemic treaty, get up to date on that with James Roguski. So, but first, let me start with telling you that this hour of radio is brought to you by Children's Health Defense, and we're so grateful for the support there. Now, in case you're new to the show, there is a Washington chapter of Children's Health Defense that started not too long ago, not quite a year, I don't think. They've been organized in the state. Go to wa.childrenshealthdefense.org to find it, to sign up, to get a free newsletter. But also, we're asking, if you can, to donate just a little bit every month or just once to the Washington chapter for a couple of reasons. Those donations keep this free speech on the air. You know, we don't have sponsors. We just have members who help keep this hour of radio on the air. And the other thing is, recently there were three CHD bus stops, that wonderful Vax Unvax bus that went around with the wonderful Polly Tommy, gathering vaccine injury stories, hospital injury and death protocol stories, as well as the stories of people whose families are fully non-vaccinated. You know, all this data has been gathered. Those three stops, the information, the relationships, the what people felt to be finally heard and believed and understood, that's priceless. But the cost of those events was not priceless. And so we're still gathering some funds to help pay for those three stops. So if you could give a little something to the Washington chapter, wa.childrenshealthdefense.org, that would really help us out and get those costs put to bed and move forward on other great projects in the state of Washington. So the views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KKNW or CHDTV. We're not giving medical or legal advice. I do have Dr. Javier Figueroa with us today. Hey, good to see ya.
Good to see you too, Bernadette.
While we're, I'm sending something here real quick. I think I did it. Let's see. I'm going to, Nathan, take a look and see if I sent you the right one. I was doing it blindly. So we'll see what's going on there. So I haven't seen you for a while. You got a haircut, looking good.
Yep. Feeling good too.
That's really good. And what I really appreciate, well, so many things about you, Javier, is you keep up on things that I don't necessarily, there's so much to follow. And so really, it's just a matter of what speaks to you the loudest and follow that. And so I Absolutely. Do appreciate that you're here this hour and especially the second hour, because I think you've been following the global things a little more closely than I have. I appreciate that, sir.
Of course.
Yeah. So, I did a pre-recording of our interview of a Washington farmer, Washington gardener. His name is Monty Norris, and he's an individual that I met probably 2020 when I met a lot of people. It was really amazing, the people that came from all walks of life, every race, creed, whatever you want to call it, everybody coming together when they felt their freedoms being trampled, right? That's how I met you.
Exactly. Yes.
On a bridge. Pretty cool. And so, you know, we're talking about soil in this half hour video that we're going to show here in just a second. But soil is almost the metaphor, right? We're all turning back to the soil, trying to figure out what the heck and where we go from here. So how about we just go ahead and listen to that interview? It's about a half hour, and then we'll come back and have some conversation. And I've got a few notes of things I want to discuss with you. So Nathan, if you're ready to go ahead and play that. Health Hour of Informed Life Radio.
Thank you so much, Bernadette. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad that you could join us for this very important hour. You know, this show is sponsored by the Washington chapter of Children's Health Defense. And so I'm so pleased to bring on somebody in Washington State, such as yourself, who really fights and stands up for freedom and for liberty, and also has got their hands right in the soil of liberty, quite literally.
Indeed.
Yeah. So I first met you in Washington because we were both, you know, standing up and speaking out on different issues that were happening in Washington State. And that's when I learned that you, that you're a farmer, that you're an organic farmer, organic gardener. And so you know intimately the interplay between the soil and health. And what's astounding, Monty, is that the interplay between the soil and freedom. Did that come as a surprise to you in 2020 when so much began?
I don't know if I've even made that connection now. So yeah, this is definitely a surprise.
Yeah.
I think that there are a lot of things that are very interesting that have happened between 2020 and now. So the two topics, freedom and soil. I think that, first of all, my story starts actually completely outside of understanding anything about what was going on in 2020. I thought that everything was going quite nicely, and I thought that all the players that are watching out for us were all in our best graces, and they had our best intentions in mind, and I was deceived. And after that, I've been a farmer my whole life, but I wasn't full time about it until probably 2021 ish. And in that time, then I started doing full time farming. We did hay and cattle farming, so my expertise is more in that area. I also have done a lot of gardening my whole life. To be considered certified organic by any kind of official government agency, you have to go through a whole bunch of different things, and even then it's like anything else, one of those things where there's a lot of loopholes. To be certified organic, for instance, can't have a cedar post that has tar or diesel on the bottom to make it last longer within like 100 or 300 yards of anything you're growing. So
wow.
I don't remember the exact specifications, but we are not certified organic, if that is a thing. But we grow everything naturally. We grow everything with chicken or cow manure. We grow everything according to how it was supposed to be grown. And so that is kind of a quick background on what I did there and my background on that.
Yeah, explain. So you say you've been a farmer your whole life. Now, were you born on a farm? Were your parents farmers? Yep.
My family is a family of farmers in Washington, and we've always done hay and cattle, and then had gardens. We've largely fed ourselves. In recent years, it's been more from the supermarket, but we've been we got back to the garden following 2020, and we did a whole bunch of canning. And the thing is that a lot of these things, to be able to maintain your health and to be able to maintain the quality of the food you eat nowadays, you just have to spend a lot of time. And it's one of those things where if you're not spending the time to grow and then preserve your food, there is really no guarantee what you're eating. So that's kind of where we're at. And that's basically what I'm aiming for as far as life goes. I would like to have enough garden preserves to last my entire year, and I'm working up to that again.
Now, prior to the whole kind of COVID chaos that we experienced, were you aware of all the greater forces out there undermining the soil, undermining health. You know, because you said you were shopping at regular grocery stores rather than. So did you have this mind shift, this learning curve that happened, that gave you a greater awareness that you wanted to return more to the roots of your family and to the soil?
I would definitely define it more as a learning shoot. It's mm-hmm. as if I walked over something and then just plummeted straight into the nature of this reality. Because wow. What you're told, I graduated with 2 degrees. I've been a very nice servant of the system for a very long time. And I just believed. I believed that the institutions and the experts all had were actually doing science, had actually our best interest in mind, and I was deceived. So I would say that it was a complete shock to me what we actually live in starting in 2020. And then since 2020, I have radically changed my life in basically every way. And the thing is, so for instance, mm-hmm. I voted very liberal. I believe very liberal ways. And it's not that I necessarily am a big conservative now, but there's a lot of, we're just in a different space now. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I occasionally eat at McDonald's. It wasn't a big deal. Now I literally don't believe it's food. So mm-hmm. it's not just that, oh, I'm now growing my own food. I just didn't have any idea about the nature of what we were actually putting into our bodies at that point.
Yeah.
Or minds.
I think you've described what happened to a lot of people. So many of us in our lives, I had sort of wake up calls, you know, a few years before you did, but you know, you have this sense
in America.
Yeah. Well, it was very helpful to not have that shock because I was prepared not to trust anything, but, you know, this complacency, taking things for granted. We took for granted, you go to the store, there's going to be food. And then if it's in the produce department, you think it's healthy. You know, and you think no big deal to do this or that. But I think what we all learned, and again, I go back to the soil, what so many people realized is how important really getting down to the fundamentals of what life really is and the building blocks of life and the importance of freedom.
Yes.
And the importance of doing that hard work. You have to toil and fertilize freedom. Or it decays and it's taken from you, right?
It is taken from you.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about though what it's like in Washington State, which is a gorgeous state. You know, I moved to Tennessee, but I tell you, I can close my eyes and still see some of the most amazing vistas that is Washington State, you know, from the Olympic Mountains to the Cascades and Puget Sound and, you know, the expanses in Eastern Washington. It's a gorgeous state with beautiful people. Yeah. So gardening in the soil, though, is different parts of the state are quite different. Of course, Eastern Washington has a whole other soil issue, but you're in Western Washington, right?
Yes, I'm in Western Washington.
Yeah, and some of the most rich soil. Now, here in Tennessee, it's really odd to get used to digging in clay soil. It's not this gorgeous, rich brown stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And when it rains and then dries, it's like cement. It really is.
Yes, it is.
So tell us about the soil. Tell us about the changes in the soil that you've experienced growing up as a farmer gardener with your family. And then like what you appreciate it now and what you do now to preserve the soil.
Okay, so I think I want to start with more or less everything you know about the soil, and you can broadly paint this across everything, is that it's a lie. You do not ever need or want to be using any kind of inorganic chemicals to be putting into your soil. Largely after you get done, so we're going to say a garden. If you're going to only want to do a garden, after you do some sort of tilling the very first time, you're mm-hmm. going to want to try and do things differently after that. I think that it's a very wise choice to try to till as little as possible. I think that there's a lot of things that we are not told about electroculture and literally when you use the iron or steel to till the land, it does a lot of dispersing of a lot of the energy that's in it. It also inverts the natural order of things. So then, so you grind it all up, which is good actually the first time to be able to plant things in. Otherwise, it's very difficult. But then what ends up happening is that you need to make sure that you are capturing as much as you can of how it would naturally be. So you got, you got your rows, you put in your cow manure, your chicken manure. Chicken manure is hot, so you want to make sure that you use it after it's been seasoned. Cow manure or rabbit, a lot of people are going turning to rabbits now. So if you have rabbits, you can use that manure immediately also. And then you can just put it into the soil and start cultivating something. Things to note about, if you're going to cultivate a garden, I definitely recommend you do some sort of staggering of the crops so you can have all the radishes you would like, and you can plant them all in the very beginning and then be done with them in, I don't know, a month or two. But if you stagger them and you have like timing, like you plant some now and then plant some in 2 weeks and et cetera, then you can have radishes for a much longer period of time. Another lie about this, and I'm just kind of brain dumping a whole bunch of things. Another lie about this is that the season's over in the fall. If you can plant an early fall garden of coal crops, and coal crops are cabbage and broccoli and all of the coal family.
Cruciferous vegetables.
Yes, I think it's brassicae.
Brassicas.
Thank you. All of those grow all winter as long as there's not something some sort of terrible freeze. If you're going to have a bad freeze, or if you're going to have a freeze, then you can just cover it with some cloth. Or you can cover each plant individually with bags or a tarp for the night, and then you can pull it off in the morning, and then you can literally we had vegetables all winter long, because as long as you stagger it again, you can have fresh vegetables that are grown in your garden where you know where they're from and you know what you fed them until the next season's garden. I think it's very valuable to get more or less all of the ideas of what we've been trained, and this is true of large scale farming, where they've trained us that we have to put on inorganic compounds all over the soil, otherwise we won't get a crop. Or in the garden, where they trained us that we've got to put in inorganic stuff into the garden. Or with freedom, where they train us that we have to do whatever they say, or we won't have freedom.
Right.
Whatever.
Yes.
And so it's one of those things where, largely we have been lied to about more or less everything. So disregard all of our suppositions about what's going on and find the truth.
Yes. I recently heard somebody talking about, gardening in the soil and the no-till method. That's been covered a lot, and that fascinates me. I love that no-till method where you just keep layering on. You know, you have your cover crops and then you smash them down and then you keep adding your nutrients. And they said, look at the wilderness. The wilderness never tills, that doesn't disturb the soil. And look how gorgeous and lush and how much nature provides. And so having farming and gardening more closely emulate what nature does so brilliantly, it seems like mankind works so hard for so many years, far too many years, fighting nature, fighting bugs, fighting the soil, fighting the weather, that we forgot to step back and look to see what does nature do brilliantly? How can we imitate that and harness that and respect that? And that is, I just love that so many people, as I started off when I started talking to you here, is when they begin realizing their freedom is being stolen, they realize it's like this big picture of what's important in life comes to them, right? And
yes,
the complacency goes away. You stop taking things for granted. You realize what's important. You realize your family, your friends are so important. We were torn apart during COVID, and we realized the value of, we can't let that happen. The fabrics of society. And it's the same with the soil that has been so disturbed. And So I'm just so thrilled that so many people are turning to that basic fundamental. They're turning, you know, to God, to their whatever their faith is, turning to the soil. And that's giving them a sense of peace. Now, when you're out there gardening there in the state of Washington, and does it bring a sense of peace for you when you're working the soil?
Yes. So, man, you touch on so many great things there. Yes, there's an immense amount of peace. The mind and spirit are very relaxed at the end of the day. The back might be sore from being in the dirt and on your knees and doing all the work. But the thing is that our bodies are meant to be doing that work. And so I think that is part of the thing is getting out there and accomplishing something. And then the next day you can see the fruits of your labor. It's not some sort of nebulous idea that we go to our office job and we take care of whatever generic widget thing. And you can actually see the growth of what you're doing in real time and see your effects on it. Because if you water it or you don't water it, both have an effect on it. Mm-hmm. So yes, very, very valuable. I think the new no-till method, going back to what you were speaking about, is extremely valuable. I think it's very important. I think that going back to more or less how nature does things, it's done perfectly. It's not an accident. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, again, there are different ways you can get to the starting of the garden. I actually am not opposed to, if you don't have a rototiller, then just start with the no-till method. I think that a good way to get things started is one rototilling. Then you can get things planted as long as you got the fertilizer that's, again, hopefully organic. It's a great way to kick-start things. Mm-hmm. However, raised beds and no-till method is ultimately, I believe, the best way to go on these things. And if people can look into electroculture, I think that's a really good way of looking into things, because people don't think about everything is made of energy. Everything needs energy.
Yeah. So tell me, I've never heard that term before. I want to know more about that. I had heard that, you know, using metal plows, you know, that has been known that it actually impacts the soil, that the type of utensils that you're digging with. What do you know about that? You're calling it electroculture?
Electroculture. So to give you a small snapshot into large scale farming, everything is done with large metal equipment, and it tears up the soil. And then what they do is then they plant the inorganic fertilizer over it, and then they get a crop. And what ends up happening is that the crop that they get, it more or less pulls all the nutrients out of the soil into something that has a very, very, very small root base with a very large fruiting head. What really we're looking for in healthy soil and healthy life and healthy everything is a very large root base of anything. And then whatever, I mean, that can actually lead to a very large plant on top, but it leads to a much healthier plant and a plant that's absorbing the right nutrients. So part of the other thing is that the nutrients in the soil are not the same as what our grandparents had in the soil.
Yes.
So when people are like, oh, I'm eating organic or inorganic, the foods we're eating now are not the same as they were then. You can call an apricot the same thing as an apricot now, but it's not the same nutrients. And at some point, maybe we should have a conversation about how I went down the rabbit hole pretty deeply on, I think that more or less all of the plants that you are going to have in your garden come from about 12 different plants. So if you go back about 150 years, basically everything comes from 12 plants. So for instance, when we talk about the kohl family, all of those come from a singular mustard plant out of the Mediterranean area. So now here we are, we've got this Brassica cruciferae. I can't remember exactly what it was, but that one plant is the, if you go and look at the seed packets, or if you go and look at the I don't know what they call the genealogy, the heritage of these plants, it all comes from one plant. And you think that, so some of them have been selected for the leaves, and some have been selected for the flowers, and some have been selected for the whatever. The big deal is now here we are 150 years later. Do you think you're getting the same nutrients from getting one plant that's fed to you in 12 different varieties, and on top of that, the soil is no longer containing the same nutrients?
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a big problem.
It's a very interesting problem.
Mm-hmm. And humans sort of look the same, and yet we are not. It's funny. Well, not funny, haha, but
ironic.
Yeah, we are not as healthy as our ancestors. Now, of course, some of our ancestors had very difficult lives. They, you know, there are some benefits, obviously, to modern life. Mm. But our ancestors who were well enough off to be able to farm well and eat well and store their food and that sort of thing, you know, they had that true basis of health. I mean, I was thinking the other day, I was watching there's a documentary on Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, as you mentioned McDonald's earlier. And first of all, he wasn't really the founder. It was the McDonald brothers who are the founders. He somewhat half stole it from them.
As all good ideas have, you know.
But, you know, I was thinking as they were serving their very first burger, fries, and a soda for 35 cents, that was in 1950, basically a grass-fed beef burger on an organic bun, because I don't think they were spraying wheat as a defoliant with Roundup, you know, in the 1950s yet.
Hopefully not.
And hopefully not. And so really that meal was so much more healthy, even though it was fast food, compared to that very same meal today, the chemicals in the meal today and how the cow was raised and everything. It's just depleted and sad.
Indeed.
In such a short amount of time. And wouldn't it be lovely though, if we could go back and have fast food drive through and get yourself an organic grass-fed beef burger? I mean, I would love that.
It would be lovely. Yeah. It's probably never coming back, but yes, it would be lovely.
Yeah. Now in Washington right now, so it's getting close to Mother's Day. Now the general rule in many parts of the United States is you don't plant until after Mother's Day because you're likely to have a hard frost. So what does your garden look like now? And is there anything you're holding off that you would recommend people hold off planting until after Mother's Day or the last frost?
Man. So, The start of that is I'd actually definitely recommend that you check your area's charts for what you should be planting in this time. Mm-hmm. Washington is different than everywhere else. Also, everywhere has microclimates. And they talk about this as if it's some sort of special, unique idea. 1 mile to the next mile down, based on mountains or trees or rivers or any number of things, will create a wildly different climate. So, for instance, on the farm, we're primarily, again, we're based around hay and cattle. So it's largely open. It's largely dry. It dries out faster than everywhere else. However, 1 mile up the road, they can freeze into June. So it's not it's just not quite the same to give any kind of general advice about this. So I definitely recommend you look up whatever your local area information is. And it's just going to take some trial and error. The colloquial idea is actually not necessarily Mother's Day. It's actually after the first full moon. After the first full moon in May, you should be safe. However, it's not 100%. Mm-hmm. So that's the general idea. And actually, if you don't mind, I want to jump back to electroculture to give a quick little. So electroculture is the idea of largely it's copper, although if you can afford gold, gold is better, but you are using some sort of copper antenna to draw in etheric energy or the energy of the atmosphere, which we all know there's energy everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so what you can do is you can put this into pots. I have done it myself. I have not done it on such a large scale level because I'm a little bit worried of people in 2024 coming through and taking all the copper out of my garden.
Yeah.
So it's, but I have done it in pots and in small scale, and there's an absolute difference. It is largely, as we talked about before, underground. So what ends up happening is, at least in my experience, the roots grow in a significantly faster, significantly better way. And then that provides a much better uptake of all the nutrients.
So when you put copper, are you talking about, say, a cute little copper fork or something you stab into the soil? Or how do you introduce copper to the soil?
Sure. So what I've been doing is I've been taking literally just like a piece of copper, not necessarily something that would go inside of a thick gauge wire that you can bend. And people have all kinds of cute little designs they make, like pyramids or snowflake designs. And maybe those are effective. I haven't gotten that far into it, but I can tell you with certainty that, at least according to my anecdotal evidence, the taller it is, the more energy it draws into the plant. And so...
So some of it is above the soil and some is below the soil. Does some have to be above? Go ahead.
A rod. Imagine you had a large stake between mm-hmm. 1 foot and as high as you want. And you put it into the plant or into the soil right next to the roots of mm-hmm. whatever plant you'd like to encourage. And it does wonders. It's wow. quite magical.
I'm going to give that a try. I'm excited.
You should
to
definitely
try that.
Do it. Yep.
And Monty, what do you do? Let's go to the garden aspect. So what do you do to avoid pests in your garden?
Okay, so thank you. I couldn't remember the other thing I wanted to come back to your conversation. That is exactly what I wanted to come back to. So all pests and all blights on your plants or your life are actually a lack of or a surplus of some sort of nutrient or something. Okay. So for instance, in the dirt, we use calendula. Calendula marigold is a flower, and we use that around the outside edge of the garden to protect against nematodes, and it also draws a number of other pests, and that will help keep your cabbages and everything else from getting a variety of pests. However, pests are called to plants that are in distress. So if your plants are healthy enough, largely, and obviously there's an exception to everything, if your plants are healthy enough, they will not draw pests to them. So looking into various things about your soil, if you want to Google simple soil tests to see if your soil is basic or acidic, and then use various methods to try and draw that. Usually it's a good idea to put in some sort of lime for a lot of different plants. And obviously fertilizer, cow or chicken, is a good way of getting a lot of nutrients into the soil. Different plants obviously require different things. So, I mean, some require sandy soil, some require less moisture. It all depends on what you're growing.
Do you do any companion planting, like with onions or garlic around certain crops?
Yes, I do. So there are charts of this everywhere also, and I highly recommend it. Everyone else has already got this information down, but yes, the companion planting is really important, not just for growth of things or deterrence of the growth, but it's also very important because some plants will actually trade their flavors onto other things that you don't want. So for instance, if you had wormwood next to any of the dill family, that supposedly, and I've never done it, but supposedly that sort of uncompanion plant will make a dramatic flavor difference in your dill. So that sort of thing. But yes, there's all kinds of companion plant lists. Definitely look into it. Very important, in my opinion. And you can try and do like the Three Sisters is very popular also, which is like the idea of like the beans and the corn and the... do you remember the other one?
No, I remember the term Three Sisters and the beans and the corn, but I can't remember what else it is.
I don't remember either, but the point still stands that it's largely easier, or maybe it's like beans, corn, and cucumbers, and the cucumbers like block out all the soil. I think that's what it is. Ah. But the point still stands. While it's a cute idea in theory, it's oftentimes just easier to just plant them separately so you can get to the plants.
Yeah.
So like, yes.
And what do you like for mulch in the Pacific Northwest? Do you have a favorite mulch to, once your little seedlings are up and growing, to put around your plants?
Comfrey is one of the best herbs. So another thing, I'm going to throw in like a medicinal herb idea. Mm-hmm. More or less everything that people are spraying with glyphosate in their yard is actually extremely valuable in either for your own personal health or for your ground's health. Just like you said, the earth and your body have all of the same nutrients and desires. Mm-hmm. So everyone sprays dandelion, but dandelion can have so many positive impacts from the the leaves in salad or from the roots in some sort of faux caffeinated idea. It's extremely valuable, and yet everyone's out there spraying it. Yeah. So comfrey is an extremely important detoxifying wild herb. Most people think of it as a weed. It grows like crazy. It grows in the shade. It grows with water. It grows without water. It will actually take over. I mean, a lot of these are weeds for a reason. But a way of using comfrey is to chop it and then put it as mulch around places. You can use it in some sort of like compost tea. I think those are very valuable because that actually stretches the green matter out to a lot of different things. So if you want to look up how to make compost tea, I highly recommend that. But comfrey is probably my favorite. Also, you can eat it. Also, your animals can eat it. It detoxifies you. It's really good.
That's awesome. And then a final word of advice for folks there in Washington State who are really interested maybe in getting started in their garden, they're newbies. What would you recommend they do just to get started?
I think like everything in life, the most important thing is to do something now. Yes, it's great if you could have planted a tree 20 years ago, but do something now. If it's a pot or a box on a window and you're just growing your little herbs for your kitchen, anything to get you started into the dirt, into growing, into what nature is here for us to do. So I definitely recommend any little start. And if it takes pots or whatever, do that to get going. And then ultimately, if you can get into a garden, that's obviously better, but pots are great too.
Yeah. I love that because, you know, there is that, even if it's just a little something growing on your windowsill, that connection with a little bit of soil and the miracle of life. I look at a little seed and I think, how does this little seed know it's supposed to turn itself into a carrot or a radish?
It turns itself into a carrot. Isn't that weird?
Every time. How does it know? What are the instructions inside that tiny little thing? It's just so amazing. And I think the world is really wanting to turn back to the amazing, brilliant miracle of life and learning to value it, to nurture it. From there, we get peace and harmony and love, don't we, Monty?
I think that's a really good start. I would like to think it would only take that much. It doesn't seem like that though.
Well, you know, it's really amazing. What I love about all of our work, we call ourselves freedom fighters, and yet everybody in the movement that I know is very peaceful. It's a loving fight. It's a fight full of grace and forgiveness and open arms to welcome people every step of the way and to help each other, you know, find other people who are a few steps ahead of you in gardening and make friends over the soil. Well, Monty, thank you so much for your time and for joining us on the Health Hour Inform Life Radio. Have a blessed garden this spring and summer.
And thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. So that was Monty Norris out there in Washington State. Any thoughts on what you heard there, Javier?
Well, I'm glad that he mentioned electroculture because there is a long history of applying electricity to improve plant growth and plant yields. And this is something that was known since the 1700s, 16 to 1700s, when electricity was discovered and it could be you can make Leyden jars and produce steady currents. Mm-hmm. People realized, applying a field of voltage from ground to the space above, you could get those plants to grow faster.
Isn't that fascinating? In my old days of writing historical mysteries, I didn't come across that, but if I ever get back to writing fiction, I'm going to have to incorporate that into one of the.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing to discover because it was a craze. It was a fad. And you have a lot of late 1700s, early 1800s, scientists working on that. So they have some amazing results.
Humans are really funny. Somebody will discover something or invent something, and then others get very curious and figured, what else can we do with this stuff? Yeah. And I do remember that they called it, there was one article in the Seattle Times, like in 1901, and somebody was calling it that sparky stuff. I don't know about that sparky stuff, but you know, we try to like, gee, I wonder if it makes you healthier. Oops, maybe not, you know, or should we try it here? What if we put it in there? And humans are just amazingly curious. And but part of the problem, and trying to, you know, I'm a big person who likes to think in big picture and find metaphors to understand. And in that conversation with Monty, I just keep going back to, you know, what the heck went wrong? And in all aspects of our lives that we're seeing that really became massively visible during COVID, we encounter, say, the greed of industry, the marketing messages of industry telling us their modern way, which is profitable for them, is the better way.
Right.
And that's what really has become visible. So maybe that's why the soil now, people, once you wake up and you begin to see how every bit of our lives has been captured by industry, telling us messages that are completely false. You know, like you have to take this pill, do things this way. Only modern science can save you. When
not really.
No, I mean, I think modern science is brilliant at trying to discover how life works, but we're really bad at when we try to interfere with how life works.
And one thing I do remember, this was when I was in college at Davis, was discovering that right during the war period during World War II, there was a heavy reliance on organic farming methods because everything that was petroleum-based was being pushed towards manufacturing and transportation. Mm-hmm. And there was very little in the way of pesticides and fertilizers to be used for growing food. Yet, there was a program, a USDA program, that promoted organic farming to the exclusion of everything else. And after 1946, that program was shut down.
Of course it was, even though it probably had amazing yields with,
oh, yeah.
with yeah. wonderful. So that's another, you know, as Monty would say, another big lie, because the industry likes to say that you cannot feed the world with old-fashioned methods, with regenerative farming, although they're co-opting. That's something that we didn't get to in our conversation was, it's very frightening to me where now, depending on the browser you're on,
yeah,
if you search for, say, regenerative farming, which is something that's fabulous, it's been, that term has been co-opted by the World Economic Forum and other industry players. So they're using their usual marketing messages as they're delivering a message that speaks to your heart. You're like, yay, this is wonderful. But the deeper you go into how they're taking that idea and what they're doing with it, that more it leads to their highly profitable, you know, new products, you know, no,
right.
not really what you're looking for.
Exactly.
It's very concerning. In fact, I brought to the attention of a local radio station and even sent it to a major national talk show host. This is slightly off topic, but there's a commercial out there, you'll see, or public service announcement, because it's from a nonprofit,
right,
saying that the social media is targeting your children. They're putting all, you know, stuff in front of your children that you wouldn't let a babysitter do that to your child, put no. those images and all that. You're agreeing with this. You're agreeing. And this PSA is saying, you know, we're here because, you know, these companies are getting rich off of putting this stuff in front of your children, and the government's not doing anything about it. And we're here to hold those social media companies accountable. And it's brought to you by, hold on. I for some reason it jumped out of my head. It's brought to you by, now where did it go? I know, the Center for Countering Hate. There's one more letter in there.
Digital hate,
CCDH, the Center for Countering Digital Hate, which is the extreme leftist censorship organization that's been working to censure Facebook and Twitter and it's working with the White House.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yes.
This is an they're after, and if you listen to that ad very closely, you realize they're trying to get more censorship. Now, of course, we want to protect our children from these awful messages and the images that they're seeing, but that's not why they're telling you this message that speaks to your heart and emotionally moves you as a parent.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're trying to convince you during the next legislative session, perhaps, to encourage your legislators to pass bills for censorship.
Right.
That's what they're right. trying to do.
It was the same thing with the TikTok ban. It's just been lie after lie. The TikTok is not majority owned by the Chinese. It's actually American businessmen. And the majority of the servers, or at least all the servers for TikTok, are in Texas.
Wow.
The amount of misinformation and distraction that was thrown about with TikTok is basically someone was trying to just get more ownership of TikTok.
Yeah.
And Congress was benefiting from it because they were writing legislation and they could buy up stock or sell stock or short stock. So it was also a two for one. You can make money by also putting out legislation that allows you to ban certain social media outlets if they cross you.
You know, it really takes conversations, a lot of times paying close attention and engaging conversation to figure out where, because the marketing is quite brilliant for all the nefarious things they want to do. They will capture us on the issues that are important to us. But I want to get back to seeds here for the last few minutes. I've got, Nathan's got a little video that he's going to play for us because, you know, here I am 60 years old and I've never really looked closely, or maybe I did in high school and I forgot my high school biology or whatever class it would have been in. What makes a tiny little seed grow? And it's fascinating. So Nathan, if you could go ahead and play that for us, that would be great.
Just as a human embryo contains all the genetic material that determines our development into full-grown adults, the embryo of a seed does much the same thing. A seed is formed by a plant after sexual reproduction. But what happens next is even more exciting. The seed is made of three parts: the embryo, which gives rise to the new plant, the endosperm, which nourishes and provides food for the seedling, and the seed coat, the hard outer covering that protects the embryo. The process by which a seed transforms into a plant in optimum sunlight, air, and water is called germination. A seed can grow within its range of minimum and maximum temperatures. Any temperature outside this range can either damage the seeds or make them dormant. The seed coat has tiny holes, or pores, through which water and air can enter. Like any living thing, the seed needs oxygen, and it releases carbon dioxide until the leaves grow, at which point it can produce oxygen. If the optimal conditions are met, the seed absorbs more and more water, swells up, and bursts. Once the seed coat bursts open, a primary root emerges, known as the radical. In almost all plants, the root comes before the shoot, although there are some exceptions, such as coconuts. Once the root appears, it begins to absorb water and nutrients from the soil, essentially replacing the seed coat. A seedling that hasn't grown leaves yet survives off the starch stored inside the cotyledons of the seed. Once the seed bursts, the root and the cotyledons are still present, while the seed coat falls in the soil and detaches itself from the plant. The cotyledons continue providing food to the baby plant until the leaves emerge to produce their own food. After the root, the hypocotyl and the epicotyl grow upwards and form the plant's stem, and the epicotyl forms the first leaves. The cotyledons fall off, since their job is done, and the plant can now produce its own food. Thus, the process of germination is complete. Not all seeds are created equal. They differ in shape, size, color, and requirements for survival. Some seeds have a harder seed coat than others, which takes more time to soften before bursting open. Such seeds must absorb more water to soften the seed coat, which slows germination. Seed dormancy is the sleeping period of the seed, in which it does not germinate, even when the conditions are optimal. The reason for such a staggered germination pattern is to prevent herbivores from eating all the plants at once, and to prevent the seeds from catching any viruses that might have spread to other plants. In certain seasons, such as autumn and winter, when the soil is too cold, the seed also goes into dormancy. If the seed is planted too deep, it may consume all the energy and food stored in the cotyledon before the shoot can emerge from the soil. If the soil is not sufficiently watered, the seed will dehydrate and die. Finally, if there is too much water, the seed suffocates and dies due to a lack of oxygen. Any condition outside this optimum range can lead to the death of the seed. It looks like humans aren't the only species that can be a bit high maintenance.
What do you think? Isn't that an amazing video? And I want to thank scienceabc.com. Scienceabc.com, that's where I found that video. It's still a miracle to me. I mean, now I think of a carrot seed. It's so small. There's an embryo in there.
Yep.
Whoa.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. And Javier, think about, okay, so we just looked at just a fragment of what scientists have discovered about what it takes to make that help that little seed grow to healthy, you know, adulthood, as it were. And now we look at what we do in modern life to human beings and the, you know, the eggs, the seed in women and what they're exposed to and what the men are exposed to. And then when the fertilization happens, the baby gets to grow, all of the things that they're exposed to, especially now the horrific practice of vaccinating a pregnant woman. And you know, where's all the caution of understanding what is needed to optimally grow that little seed to fruition for the humans, right?
Right.
Oh my goodness. It's a wonder we're as healthy as we are. And yet, it used to be the rate of chronic illness in the United States is 54%, but I think it's got to be so much higher. Do you know anybody who doesn't have something that they're dealing with? It seems like, you know, it's got to be much higher.
It probably is. And it just depends on the age groups that you interact with. But my parents are taking medication for high blood pressure, things like that. Mm-hmm. I know family members that are on several medications as well. So it's very rare to find someone who is not taking something to manage whatever condition.
So, yeah. And it's like, instead of going to the soil of what makes that individual healthy to get rid of the symptom, they're just treating the symptoms. So it's exactly what big pharma, big chemical, big ag, big food, how they handle things, right? And
exactly.
Because the healthy way of doing it is more hard work for the individual and it profits industry not at all.
Yep, that's exactly it. And it's convenient. We have a very convenient life. And when you can actually not work to do something, mm-hmm. you know, laziness wins out. But
yes.
The convenience or being inconvenient to actually go and grow your food, interact with the soil, mm-hmm. has benefits. You just need to understand and realize that.
Right. And, you know, one of my favorite expressions is we threw the baby out with the bathwater. And, you know, we really did try to make life very convenient. Some of the things that we threw out that we didn't really understand. We do now, but it's so hard to reverse course.
Yeah.
But many people are reversing course. And, you know, you don't have to do it all, right? I mean, you know, even if you just grow a little bit and then you talk to neighbors who are growing and you swap produce and you find your local farmers who that's their passion and they're good at it and you support them. So together we can restore health and to the plant, to the soil, to ourselves. And we're down to our last minute. So I'm hoping that after we take the break that people will stick around for the next hour, because this is another place that really needs attention. And we've got the wonderful James Roguski, who's been on it, telling us the latest of what is known about the World Health Organization pandemic treaty, or whatever you want to call it, because at the end of this month is when the president of the United States is supposed to sign that puppy that we don't want him to sign.
No, we don't.
No, not at all. But a lot of people are taking action and a lot of states have filed resolutions saying they will not obey it. So a recognition is happening, but it needs to escalate. So go ahead.
100% needs to escalate.
Yeah, we all need to get loud on it. And so knowing where to get the information, that's what we're going to hear in the next hour, how you can take part, and everybody, if everybody just does a little bit to share it, we can stop disaster from happening. So you've been listening to the Health Hour on Informed Life Radio and 1150 AM KKNW and CHDTV. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. During this unprecedented response to an infection outbreak, it has been made very clear that shutting down lives and businesses is not sustainable or repeatable. We've also learned that it's unnecessary. Treatments exist and always exist. For 99% of the population, nutrients and oxidative therapies that support the immune system and improve symptoms are always available to address viral infections. For the less than 1% who need more, inexpensive, unpatentable drugs can be added to the nutrient therapies to improve outcomes. It's time each and every one of us empower ourselves with this knowledge. We need not ever bring our lives to a halt again. We can both save lives and retain the liberty that nourishes us body and soul. Learn more at healthyimmunitynow.org. That's healthyimmunitynow.org.
Children's Health Defense is a nonprofit organization with a mission to end childhood health epidemics by working aggressively to eliminate harmful exposures, hold those responsible accountable, and establish safeguards to prevent future harm. The Washington chapter of Children's Health Defense is stepping up at the state and local levels, but we can't do this without you. Join us at wa.childrenshealthdefense.org. Let's restore and defend children's health and their futures in Washington State.
The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.